Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, I am so glad to be recording and podcasting with you right now because that means that last week is over. I attended three conferences in 1 week. There's something about January where the sex toy industry, the porn industry, all the different industries feel like January is the time to have their conference. So I started out by going to the ANME trade show, which is all the distributors and manufacturers of sex toys and all the buyers for companies. They all get together, talk about their sex toys, look at the sex toys, talk about the sex toys, schmooze. And that was really fun. I saw a lot of cool toys. One, it's funny to say, but the one that really sticks out in my mind is from Fun Factory. They have a new dildo that they put, basically they put Kegel balls inside. You know what is the ball within the ball that shakes when you walk? Well, they put a couple of those within their dildos so that when you're using it, yeah, the weight of these heavy balls inside shake around. And I think that that's just so simple. Like, why didn't I think of that? You know, why hasn't that always been a thing? And so I like that a lot. But I, for some reason, my social anxiety was just on such high alert this past week that just nonstop talking to people, meeting people, business cards. I don't even know what I want to do. I don't know why or what I want to do necessarily. I just want to keep up with the toys, with what the industry, what's happening. I'm just like, I just want a blanket to hide under. But hey, it's okay. I learned how to play poker. They had a carnival night where there were lots of games. They brought in pool tables. They brought in poker tables. And I walked in, just saw everyone having a great time. There was a bull that you could ride. And I saw some people that I knew. And I walked to the corner of the giant tent that had no one in it except for a poker table and a dealer who looked very bored. And I was like, will you just teach me how to play poker? And he was like, oh, definitely. So I was surrounded by sex toy enthusiasts and manufacturers and engineers and designers, and I just couldn't handle it, you guys. but hey, now I can make some money next time I go to Vegas. Whee! Okay. Then I went to, well, the last one that I just finished up with is the She Trade Show Conference Convention Expo. They call it Expo, right? Because it's the Sexual Health Expo. It's brand new. And it was the first time that I have taught a workshop in an expo type environment where there were all sorts of great educators. And thank you for coming out, because I know a bunch of sex nerds came out. Listeners, naughty monkeys, you represented. It was great to meet you. The third conference was XBiz 360, and that's where I interview this week's episode guest, Kelly Shabari, who is a plus-size porn star, great PR lady, and just a fun, intelligent, interesting person. So I cornered her and was like, interview. And she said, yes. And we got into a room, we did it. And it was right before she had a panel. And I'm so glad that she was able to put some time aside. Let's talk about dates real quick. Ooh, Sketchfest is coming up. San Francisco. You know you want some. Ooh, why did I say it like that? I really can't wait for Sketchfest. I fly in on Thursday, January 29th to be part of their Comedy Nightlife event about love, sex, and science. And I'm talking about multiple orgasms with Peaches Christ. It's going to be awesome. Then January 30th, I am recording a live podcast at Stageworks Theater. Liza Skinner, hilarious comedian, will be a part of it. And I want to get down to business and bring your questions. I want to hear them. Let's figure it out. Oh, it's going to be fun. Check all that out at the sfsketchfest.com. nerdist.com website. And then Los Angeles, I will be back and inside you February 9th with LA Academy of Sex Ed. I'm talking oral sex for everybody. All the details can be found at laacademyofsex.com, and my calendar at sexnerdsandra.com is updated with all the details. So let's get to this episode. Kelly Shibari. I've had her on my list for a long time to talk to her about her BBW porn star status. I can't even tell you how many questions that I've always wondered about porn that she answers. And I get to find out if I am a MILF or not. And have I always wondered that? In the last couple of years, I've wondered that. I just had a great time finding out things. So it's time for us to find out the things together. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Kelly Shibari, I finally have you here.
We've known each other for so long, but this is the first time you've kind of cornered me.
Yeah, and it's always like some worky thing. And so now it's like, oh, I get to sit down with the Kelly and talk about the Shibari.
Yeah, it's usually because we're handling some other performer or somebody that you're interviewing, and I'm like the go-between or the handler.
Right. You hooked me up on the James Dean interview last year or whenever it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I was the one on set handling James, and then you stole him.
Yeah, I did. Was that disruptive?
We had to come and find you and go, where did he go? But you guys were hiding out in his car. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't lying about that. I was in a very sexy, sporty car being slowly seduced by James Dean.
He does have a very sexy car. I mean, it kind of goes with him, right?
Yeah, I had never seen him in anything. Like, I really was like, I mostly interview people that I've met before. And so someone that I've never met and also has a huge following.
Yeah.
I was a little like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. So we just like talked about cheeseburgers and whatever.
Nice. Yeah, because he's like me and a bunch of other adult performers where, you know, on camera we look completely sexy and very kind of like in charge. But in real life, we're actually kind of quiet and super dorky. Nerdy. So, yeah.
Super dorky. Well, good. Welcome. I love your purple hair.
Thank you. Yeah, this is new. Everybody's seen me with pretty much kind of natural brown hair for 8 years because this is my 8th year. And I just figured I would do something different. So I went and got it completely purpled out so people can see me from like a mile away. And I thought about different colors, but you know, everybody's doing the pink thing or the red thing. And so I said, well, and I don't really want to do green because that just makes, you know, me look kind of alien-esque.
I hear you.
Yeah. And I'm 42. So, you know, going with blue would come with all the blue hair jokes. So I was like, yeah, let's just do purple. And it turned out really good. I'm really happy with it. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I feel like doing like 42, no way. But then I feel like that's so cliche.
Because we're Asian.
Yeah. And it's all going to drop. Like at some point, just.
Yeah. There's actually like, if people want to Google, you know, Asian age progression, we all look around the same age until we turn like 50. And then all of a sudden we cut our hair short, we get a perm and we wear like big sunglasses. And then when we turn 80, I think we shrink to like 4 feet tall. So yeah, hopefully I won't have to do either one of those. Hopefully my half Irish side will kick in.
Oh, that's right. We're both half and half.
Yeah. Yeah. Half. Yep, best of both. Lots of drinking. Mm-hmm. High tolerance for alcohol. Mm-hmm. Very, very patient until we're pushed too far, and then the Irish temper comes through.
Mm-hmm. And people always say, like, oh, you look so exotic. You're so different looking on your face.
Exactly. And they're like, oh, you know, you look so Asian. Like, in my case, I have very Asian features, but my eyes are green and or are hazel. And then I have very Irish kind of build, you know, like if you're Irish, you're either like very kind of tall and redhead and very kind of ethereal, or you're kind of like stocky. Mm-hmm. I got the stocky half.
Well, you have all the boobs.
I have all the boobs and I have an Asian ass. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not much of an ass, but definitely the large natural boobs, which is kind of rare for Asian girls in porn. Cause Asian girls in porn usually are rather, they do a lot of barely legal or very athletic. And, I am neither.
No, you're super hot. And even I went to Tokyo and I was plus size. So like I didn't fit in a lot of their one size fits all stuff. I was shocked at how heifer-like I felt just...
And it does. It gives you a complex when you grow up in that environment. I mean, I was born and raised there and came to the States for college. And, you know, when you're 5'7", and I guess I was wearing like, I mean, I was already like a C cup in high school, you know, and when most of the naturalized like Japanese girls are not, I mean, you do have a segment of those girls who do that and they're all like, you know, Japanese porn actresses. But, most girls, especially the ones I went to school with, are rather flat chested. And there was me, you know, so if you're tall and you have big boobs and you're kind of chubby, then you're automatically fat. So I got the fat jokes and I got the bullying and the teasing ever since I was like in second grade all the way until I graduated.
But you got them back, didn't you?
I guess so.
I'm living an awesome life. And
yeah, I mean, I have a lot of fun. I guess I just kind of approached, I've done a lot of different things since, you know, graduating college, which is, I was a roadie for a while and then I moved to LA from New York and was a production designer for like mainstream, like Hollywood movies and commercials and music videos and infomercials and that kind of stuff. And then I got into porn, but I've always been in some segment of entertainment. This is the only segment where I've been in front of the camera. And I guess, you know, if you compare it to somebody who just does a corporate job, 9 to 5, you know, I might not make the same kind of money, but I definitely have a much more interesting life. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I turn 80 or thereabouts, I'll just have a lot of stories to tell. Yeah.
God bless your grandchildren. They're going to get all of them.
Well, that would require me to actually have children first. So it'll have to be like my friend's kids' kids rather than my own.
You're still Grandma Kelly. You're still going to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to have kids, but my brother and sister both really want. They have baby fever, both of them. So I know I'm going to have plenty of nieces and nephews to tell things to.
Yeah, I'll be like Madea. I'll be in a rocking chair, you know, telling stories about, you know, rock and roll, you know, rock and roll musicians and porn and Hollywood movies.
So let's talk about the porn part, since this is actually not just the purple hair, but there's a major transition that's just happened.
I'm definitely, well, I've been in the porn industry as a performer. This is my 8th year. But I've also been doing PR and marketing for myself as well as, and then eventually transitioning into doing it for clients for the past 5 years, specifically with social media. And I just got to a point where this past year, all of the projects, because I got into the industry for a very different reason than I think most people did. I kind of got in as a sabbatical during the writer's strike. And I just wanted something kind of interesting to do for a couple of years. And that was kind of like my plan. And then Hollywood would come back and I'd just go back to work in Hollywood. And that just kind of didn't happen because I really enjoyed where I was. And then Hollywood also didn't really come back the way they wanted it to. So I think... For me, it was always like a bucket list thing. And this past year, I kind of finished all of my bucket list stuff.
You filled the bucket.
I did. Yeah, I has a bucket.
So you're transitioning away from performing, but you did a lot of stuff this last year.
Yeah, this was the year I've been pitching a lot of projects for the past, you know, I don't know, 2-3 years. I really wanted to do a sex education film for plus size men and women. And I've been pitching it. I go to like AVN or XBiz and I would pitch it to producers, of the different kind of sex education companies. And they, at the time, either the timing wasn't right or they didn't think I was a big enough name or they just didn't understand the material and go, well, why do we have to make a sex ed movie for plus size people? Don't they just have sex like everybody else? And so I kept getting turned down and then finally ran into Jessica Drake and I pitched it and like she, without hesitation, she was like, yeah, let's do it. When can we do it? And then it took another year and a half because their schedules were so busy. So we did that. You know, Penthouse was nice enough to put me on the cover of Penthouse Forum, which, I was like, oh, how cool. You know, it's a nice interview piece. It's like a five or six page interview with like some photos. Very good for branding, but it turned out first plus size girl on Penthouse. And
wow.
So there was a lot of mainstream press from that and people were comparing it to like the first black girl in Playboy. And I was like, okay, I don't think it's that historic, but hey, cool. thanks.
Honestly, considering how there's been no allowance for diversity in body size in a lot of media, I would say that is a huge deal. Just maybe not for you.
For me, I've always just been like, well, I'm me, you know. I've never really done a lot of plus size events. I've never done a lot of like plus size political, you know, grandstanding. And the fat acceptance movement has never really been something that I was a part of, like in a really big kind of public way. It was more, hey, let's work on, why don't everybody just work on being confident regardless of your size? Yes, I just so happened to be plus size, but I really wouldn't change if I became slender or if I even got bigger or if I had purple hair, you know, like I'm just still me. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm really happy that Penthouse took a chance. And I guess that issue sold really, really well.
I bet it did.
So we're currently talking about potentially working on other projects together, which is kind of cool. And then the third project was a star showcase. There's really no star showcase for plus size done by any.
What's a star? Is that, what is that?
Oh, star showcase. So many companies are doing it now that there's actually a category for it at AVN, where it's just the one girl, the star, in every single scene. And so she's doing different men and women and couples and, you know, whatever her fantasy is. But the entire film is focused on her, as opposed to here's, you know, teen booby chicks 18, cool, where you've got four or five girls.
You're not promising all the nipples. You're promising this person doing a lot of different things.
So it and it was, I guess it's the first star showcase by a major studio that used A-list male performers. So I got to work with James.
Hot.
Which made all the girls happy. They were like, James does fat girls, yay. And James was like, but I do that. I've done several of those scenes. Mm-hmm. And I got to do my very first anal, which was funny because, you know, 8 years in the business, people assume you've already done that. And as much anal play as I like, I'm not a fan. I was just terrified, not really a fan, but like, I'm just terrified of having like a giant porno penis in my butt because I just don't have that kind of experience.
That's intense. It's not, you're a professional. You have specifics. Like,
yeah. And I also was, you know, I'm, again, because I'm older, the porn I grew up with, the anal scenes in the porn in like the 70s and 80s were more of like the, you know, you'd watch it with like your partner and go, oh, that seems kind of risque, very taboo, but she's obviously looks like she's enjoying it. Maybe we should try it. Whereas now it's all about gaping and double anal and just fisting. And it's just so extreme that I made sure that when I talked to New Sensations, Digital Sin, which is part of New Sensations, that I wanted to make sure that it was a little bit more of a sensual anal scene. And
smart.
Yeah, because, you know, I didn't want to tear my butt out either.
I mean, not to spend too much time on this. Actually, I have a vag question too. Okay. But how did you train yourself for the anal scene?
Lots of toys. Toys, you know, that start small and then you wear it for a few hours and you take that out and put the next size in. You just basically just get it used to something bigger. And then
for days, for weeks, for just that day?
Just for like, you know, because you still have to go and do like, you know, the things your body does. So I would do it for maybe, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day and then for 3 or 4 days leading up to it. And then on the day of the shoot, I woke up and I put a butt plug in and wore that with me to set. So it was already kind of ready. And Mr. Pete, who did my anal scene, was amazing and very, very gentle and an awesome guy. And then I also got to do a boy girl with Ramon Nomar and Mick Blue, who are very European. So they have the very heavy European accent, and they do a very kind of Euro style, rougher sex scene. So, so all told, it was a really good movie.
I think I saw an interview or something of yours where this is ringing a bell, but did you do your first double vaginal penetration?
No. It was a lot of kind of like vag while blowing.
Okay.
You know, that kind of stuff. After the Mr. Pete, I was like, okay, bucket list, done the porno anal.
She's saluting us.
Yeah. Don't need to do that again.
Okay. Also, sorry, I keep hitting your boobs when I'm leaning in with
my mic.
They're
big. They get in the way.
So. Oh no. Don't apologize for your body. I'm sorry. I'm not like coming at you at a different angle. Okay, I have meant to ask this to a porn performer at some point. I'm going to ask you. Does your vagina get sore, and what do you do?
My vagina doesn't get sore because we use plenty of lube, but my cervix gets super sore, especially when you're working with larger penises, you know? And I think, you know, especially because the scenes are rougher, so after a while you just feel like your cervix is just being punched. And, you know, it might, and I don't think it works that way for everybody. Everybody's vaginal canal is very different. Mine's a little tipped, so it feels shallow. And, you know, I'm kind of grateful that there's not a lot of plus size porn being shot, because I don't have to do 7 or 8 scenes a week. I do like 7 or 8 scenes a year. So, you know, but after doing a scene, it usually takes me a couple of days. It feels like cramps. Yeah. So it's a lot of kind of laying in bed and curled up, kind of like literally like cramps, like, you know, some pain medicine and a warm compress on my back.
Can they just go less deep?
I think that wouldn't be the same, you know, in terms of the fans watching it. You know, it's kind of, like, it's the whole, like, you know, you suffer for your art thing, I guess. I
you have a realistic scene where it's just like thrust, ouch, thrust, ouch.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of funny. I've always said in interviews that there's no cuddling in porn, and how disappointing that is.
Yeah, a little afterglow action would be great.
Yeah, I'd like that. That would be awesome. Some tenderness. And I think that if you do that, then that becomes, you know, couples porn. So
yeah, or great extras.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I'd love to have like foreplay sections that you can opt out of if you want to just go straight to it.
Well, I think a lot of, you know, most porn is made for the male gaze, so, or at least the heterosexual male gaze. And so I think that a lot of the porn includes tease footage of women scantily clad.
What's your favorite color?
Yeah, slowly taking off their lingerie in like a soft light, you know, like, or like on a boat, you know, or something. But there's really nothing, there's no real tease footage for women unless their gaze is for the female figure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, because I know some men would also enjoy some sweetness,
right?
As part of it. Like, it's not like men are like, screw that. I mean, and I would probably fast forward through it a lot of the times.
Yeah. I think that even more important than actual dialogue would be actually seeing eye contact and like a connection and like a soft touch or something. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's some directors out there, Jackie St. James, Eddie Powell, you know, who do couples porn that and do it well, you know, that incorporate that. So, you know, maybe there's a place for couples porn for plus size. We'll see.
That reminds me, because it bothers me that it's called couples porn. I know you're just using the lingo of the industry, but the idea that, oh, so that's for couples, even though I might be alone and just want to, you know, get a little tingle of.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I think there's a lot of men and women, single men and women, who love romance novels or love, you know, romantic, like rom-coms, you know? But yeah, I mean, it's meant, I don't know if they say couples porn because it's meant for the couples consumer or if it's couples porn because it's obvious that the people on the screen are a couple. I'd like to see it both.
I feel like it's more like making couples feel comfortable buying it because it's made specifically for them.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that. We didn't, you know, there's actually been with the plus size porn, a lot of plus size porn is just gonzo. So scene after scene, there's no real dialogue outside the scene that ties, you know, there's no like overall like storyline.
Gonzo's like point, like, is that point of view, a camera?
Gonzo, point of view is a kind of gonzo, but gonzo is very, you know, Hunter S. Thompson. So it's very just the stuff that's happening. So there's no real, you know, some of the older companies that do gonzo will have a little bit of a storyline before and after, and it's usually humorous. But most plus size gonzo is, boy, there's a girl on a couch talking to the camera. Enter boy, sex. Girl gets covered in cum. Boy leaves. And, you know, and that's, you know, how most of the gonzo porn is. So it's really just for masturbation purposes, not, and on a physical level, not necessarily like a mental level.
What if a guy's on a couch and then the girl comes in?
Yeah, there's that too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah,
different.
That too. I'm sure that there's been, you know, there's all sorts of different genres of porn. There's reverse bukkake where girls come on the guy. I think
female ejaculate.
Yeah. I think there was actually James Dean actually had a title called I Came on James Dean's Face or something like that. So, yeah, in which case he's the one that starts off the scene. I think I haven't seen a movie yet, though.
So you've been referencing plus size porn, and you have you're described as BBW.
Yeah, in the porn, so let's start with fashion. In fashion, if you're like over a size 6, you're plus size. Mm-hmm. In porn, if you're over like a size 10, 12, mm-hmm. you're plus size, and then on up. So even inside the plus size BBW genre, you've got thick, chubby, traditional BBW, and then SSBBW, which is supersized BBW.
Okay, wait. Are you saying that thick and chubby are two different things?
Yes.
And what is the difference?
Chubby, I think chubby has a little bit more of a stomach, like a belly, than thick. Thick is like, you know, you got girls who are thick. I mean, like Beyonce's thick, mm-hmm. you know, but you would never call her a fat chick. She just has really thick thighs. She has a big, juicy butt. She's, you know, what I guess society would call healthy, but not necessarily, you know, and not skinny or slender or athletic.
So you got thick, chubby, and then traditional BBW.
Yeah.
I'm not that familiar with traditional BBW.
Well, most BBW is probably, and I don't want to put like a pound figure on it. Like you have to be between this pound and this pound, like not a weight, but it's more kind of like a dress size. I think chubby kind of stops around size 12, 14. BBW is like from size 14 to about like a size 18, 20, and then beyond that is supersize.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, and just for watching, they just look like more voluptuous women. Like there's more going on, thigh, more ass.
Yeah, there's more of a thigh, there's more of a belly. The larger you get, you know, larger upper arms, mm-hmm. double chins, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's so interesting. Now, within, I guess, I don't even want to say traditional porn, but just like mainstream
porn. We call it mainstream.
Is it just like, are there any differences except for like, you're black, you're Latina, you are white, these are the things, here is an Asian person, and it's all the same? Or is it like extra skin? Is it like ESBW?
No, I think once you get into BBW, most BBW for the longest time has just been BBW.
Okay.
And it's really only been done by, you know, less than 5 companies in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get into supersized girls, that narrows it down to maybe 2 companies. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the girls kind of do their own content. Most of it's fetish when you're that size.
I was asking about the skinny girls.
And then the more slender girls tend to be almost like a crossover plus size. Mm-hmm. Like you'll have some of the larger companies, like either like an Evil Angel or New Sensations or Digital Sin, will put out a plus size title, but they won't call it BBW. They'll be like, you know, big girls, mm-hmm. or curvy girls or chubby girls, but they won't use the term BBW because the girls they use, if they lost a little bit of weight or they toned up a little bit, could easily be in a more mainstream porn category, mm-hmm. like a big bust or a big butt.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would never go up to, say, an Alexis Texas, who's known for her large booty or a Flower Tucci back in the day, and go, wow, you're a fat girl because your ass is big. There isn't that. There's actual genres just for big boob and big butt. A lot of the plus size girls have that, but they also have a belly, or their thighs are thicker, or they've got cellulite, or stretch marks. And so because of that, they don't necessarily fit into the big butt or big bust category, but they're still also not almost big enough to do BBW work either. So they're just kind of like very kind of baby fatty, you know.
And are women, our customers, I guess this is my assumption.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this isn't my assumption because I'm pretty sure I'm wrong here, but there's just most of the demand is for mainstream skinny.
Yeah. No.
And then
absolutely.
BBW is a small category.
It is niche. Yeah, BBW is definitely a niche product, which is why not every company is doing it. If it, you know, porn is a consumer, is a capitalist product. You know, I know there are feminist porn companies out there that are doing it more for the political side of things or trying to take a stand. But most, you know, red-blooded American porn is capitalist porn. So if it's making money, they'll make it. If it's not making money, then it's probably the first thing that gets dropped when they do like a budget review.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're, especially in the U.S. or any like Western civilization, we're taught because of men's magazines and fashion and beauty and Hollywood and all that kind of stuff, that the ideal female figure is, I don't know, 36, 24, 36, right? And is 5'8". And not everybody is built that way, but porn, because it's a capitalist product that's made to create fantasy for usually heterosexual cisgendered men, that's the girl that gets hired the most, you know, the leggy blonde with the big implants, you know, or the petite spinner who's very cute, but you know,
they actually use the word spinner.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay, I had a partner a long time ago that called me a spinner, and I was like, honey, I have to be so much skinnier.
I think you're too tall.
Oh, really? 5'2"?
Yeah, I think you need to be like, I think 5 feet is the cutoff, I think.
Yeah, I would be such a sluggish spinner. Like, I would just sort of go like a quarter turn and stop.
We'd be more like a weeble.
Yeah, seriously.
But I think that what you also run into is, you know, men who like women of size, you know, because that's the other definition is you've got BBW and the chubby and thick and all that. But you also have women of size, kind of like women of color. So you have men who like, you know, and run the gamut of that, like anything from I like chubby girls all the way to the bigger, the better. You know, I want them to sit on me and I don't want to be able to breathe. Like, that's kind of one of the fetish with the supersized girls is face sitting and weight based restraint play. Mm-hmm. And I think, I've had, you know, I think that there's actually, a section of women in the middle, kind of that chubby size, mm-hmm. that a lot of guys who, you know, read like the men's magazines, like an FHM or a Maxim and go, okay, I want that. But I'm willing to go, especially guys who like big boobs or a big butt, I'm willing to go with a chubby girl if I get the big boobs or I get the big ass, but I don't want to go much bigger than chubby. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I mean, everybody has their preference, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that that's the cool thing about porn, especially on the internet these days, is you get everything. You know,
everything.
Yeah.
All the things you don't even want, and they're still there for you.
You want a girl who's got elf ears and pointy fingernails, who wears, you know, weird contacts and has giant boobs and is like 4'11". You can find that.
Probably.
Right?
We should just start making up porn situations and just look up and see if they're there. I'm sure that's a game show somewhere.
Oh yeah. I'm sure that exists.
Awesome. Within women performers who are 0 to 12, in dress size, are they just categorized mainly by ethnicity, or is there anything else? I mean, I guess there's niche, like fetishes and behaviors.
Yeah, and you mean more like, and most mainstream porn girls are within like size 0 to size, I don't know, 8, 10.
Okay.
And I think beyond that just automatically becomes chubby and becomes a niche product. I think, yeah, once they're in that kind of mainstream category, you're not really in a niche. So then it becomes ethnicity. Are you Asian, Latina, white, black? And then it breaks it down even further. Are you blonde, brunette, redhead? You know, do you have freckles? I mean, are you a ginger? You know, then it becomes, do you only do girl? Do you, you know, are you large chested, small chested? Are you barely legal? Are you a MILF? Are you a cougar? I mean, it's so many tiny little categories.
Am I a MILF yet?
I don't know. How old are you?
Is it in terms of look? Like,
I think that you could pass for a MILF.
Okay.
I think you could pass for a young MILF.
Because it's like,
not cougar. I don't think you're cougar territory.
Okay.
Yeah.
But because I'm not barely legal. It's just so weird. It's like when you're not barely legal and you're not a MILF, it feels like you're not in a category. Not that I'm looking to be in a category, but there's a section.
I think that with MILFs, like if you look like you could be a school teacher, then you could probably do MILF.
Ooh.
I think that's the...
STILF. Stilf.
Stilf. Yes. Yes. Or TILF. Teacher.
TILF. TILF.
Yeah, just TILF. We just created a whole new category.
I'm into it. I'm so into it. Oh, excellent. Good. There's still room in my career to be a porn performer.
Yes. Well, there's also GILF, you know, so you can always wait until you have gray hair and just completely do the grandma stuff.
Oh, maybe I'll do that. That'll be my end of life plan.
Yes.
Right.
It's worked for some people.
Hey, I'm... Who knows where life will take me? It's good to know.
And I think that that's important. You know, I've always been the kind of person that, if the opportunity presented itself to think it through, because, you know, my Twitter says I'm an intelligent hedonist, not just a rampant hedonist. Think it through, do your research. And if it is something that you actually genuinely want to do and you don't feel pressured into doing it, why not give it a shot? You only live once. Yeah. Right? And even if you believe in reincarnation, you don't remember the next time around anyway. So you might as well give it a shot before you get too old to do anything. Yeah. And that's kind of how I've been.
I was going to strip across America several years ago.
That's amazing.
It was amazing until...
Would it have been like stripping for charity?
Or? No. It was that I was on a road trip, and once I hit the South, I wanted to just see if I could strip oh. in different clubs. But I didn't realize that my driver's license had expired.
Damn that driver, DMV.
Yeah, and I needed to rent a car because I wasn't about to take cabs.
So you could still do that, though.
I could. It's a different. That was a different life. That was a different. I was in between. It was before I became a sex educator. I was working in production as well in reality TV.
Yeah. See, writer strikes begets reality television.
Oh right. Oh yeah. That was an interesting time. Yeah. I remember that. It's hard to find work. Oh my goodness. I'm blanking. Oh, men. I wish, Meg, I like James Dean and how men have more of a following, it seems, than they used to. But are men cast in particular categories?
I think that, you know, women who do openly admit that they watch porn have always liked some kind of male porn star, and they prefer that performer's work. You know, in the late 80s and 90s, it was Evan Stone. You know, the whole like long, flowy Fabio hair. You know, he kind of was the porn version of Fabio. You know, he did all the romance pirates, you know.
That makes sense now.
He did that dashing kind of buff, blonde, flowy hair thing. And then, and then that kind of started this whole trend after that of, you know, like 90s porn and even like early 2000s porn was mostly, you know, men who are super buff. And not all of them are, but a lot of them were shaved head with tattoos that go to the gym 7 days a week. They're all CrossFit. You know, like they're those guys and, you know, spinning girls around, you know. And now we're – the past few years we've seen performers like James Dean and Xander Corvus and people who are a little bit more boy next door. You know, I wonder what he has in his pants. That kind of thing, you know.
And we get to find out.
Yeah, and then as opposed to like the guy who's like very strapping and very buff, you're like, wow, you probably are awesome in the sack, you know. As opposed to, you know, like James's kind of porn, which is or Xander Corvus's kind of porn, which is, you know, you see him in a bar and you're like, wow, he's cute, but I wonder, wonder how far he'll go.
Mystery.
Yes, and that appeals to women because it's not just a fantasy of being swept away. It's a fantasy that is more cerebral.
Yeah. I want to ask you one last question and to let you go because we are at XBiz right now and all the things are happening.
And I'm moderating a panel on PR because that's
awesome.
Where I'm segueing into.
Yeah. So. Yes, and in your segue, I have noticed that I've been curious about different, like, April O'Neil or Misty Dawn or people that, like, I've met and they're kind of in the nerd community. But that transition away from doing porn and what is that about retiring? And I'm concerned also, like, because people are always afraid, like, oh, sex workers, you ruin your life, that idea. And so what is that for a porn performer to retire and transition?
Well, I think it's funny. Like, I didn't get into the business until I was 34, you know? I mean, I'm 42 now. Like, I didn't get in when I was 18. Mm-hmm. I went to college, got a couple degrees, had a couple careers before I even got here. And so I think that my mindset has always been that this was just for fun and not necessarily, like, my primary means of an income. I've also always been freelance. I've never done a corporate job ever. You know, I went from being a roadie. That's not corporate. I mean, to production design where, like, you're interviewing for films and commercials probably the week before your current project is over. And, you know, again, like, and when you're behind the scenes, like, people don't really see you. So people don't go and go, hey, I've seen you in a porn film. Although every now and then I get a Facebook message from somebody I used to work with and be like, hey, did I work with you on this project? And it's not a porn film. and I'm usually pretty open about it because, like, my family knows what I do. And But for me, I really like this industry. And I think that having been in other segments of entertainment makes me a decent publicist, which is what I'm segueing into is as a marketer, specifically social media. But I think that understanding the industry and liking the industry, now I just don't have to be naked. Mm-hmm. That's the only difference. But I still get to go to all the conventions. I still get to have fun with everybody. And on occasion, if a company wants to hire me for a non-sex role, I'm still very much open to that because that still falls under the let's do it because it's fun, mm-hmm. you know, and if because that's the rule, right? If it's fun and you really enjoy doing it, but then you also make money, then that's golden. I think Misty is now trying her hand at doing makeup, you know, for films and things like that. And I think people like Mika Tan have also done that. I think that as long as you start thinking about what you want to transition into while you're still a performer, while you're still making money as a performer, as opposed to waiting until it's all over mm-hmm. and go, oh, I haven't gotten a booking in 6 months. Maybe I should think about something else. You need to start working on and finding things that you like about what you're currently doing that you think you can do beyond your retirement. Mm-hmm. You know, because for porn, I mean, you know, yeah, I guess for some performers you can get into MILF and GILF work, but most girls are done, you know, in a couple of years, mm-hmm. if not. You know, when people say that you're in the Hall of Fame because you've been in the industry for 10 years, 10 years is not a long time.
No.
You know, really. I mean, people don't go into the Hall of Fame, you know, for doing something for 10 years. With porn, you do. And so I think that's what's important is finding while you're still working, finding that thing that you like and sticking with it.
Cool. Do you feel like most people do retire well, or do you think it's kind of a sloppy business?
I think most people don't retire well, especially performers, male and female, don't retire well because they don't have an exit strategy. They just think that they're just going to keep doing this forever. And this is an ego and beauty-based industry. You know, if you don't know where you're going once that beauty fades, you know, or if you get injured, you know, then
your cervix might tap out.
Right. Or in the case of, you know, like there's male performers who've broken their penis.
No.
And, you know, or they've had some sort of scandal and they had to retire because they were forced to. I mean, like if you don't have an exit strategy early, then, you know, it sounds so brutal, but you really only have yourself to blame, you know?
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And the industry, just learning at Expos here, I've learned that a lot is changing for you guys.
And this is not an industry that has a very viable mentorship program. APAC is trying, which is James, and there's a bunch of performers who've gotten together to create like an advocacy committee. And I think they're trying. But I think, you know, again, it's an ego-based industry. We're not necessarily an industry that likes to help each other. Mm. We would much rather take from each other than to help each other up, which is kind of unfortunate.
Huh. Dude, well, thank you for all your honesty and really clarified some things that I've been wondering.
Yeah.
And congratulations on wrapping up your final year of porn.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, it's my last year as a performer. I mean, as a hardcore performer, but I'm still, you know, you'll probably see me pop up here and there.
Oh yeah, I mean, PR. I mean, you're doing so much. There's always something going on with what you've got.
Yeah, but
going.
I think even on camera, you'll see me pop up in some parody here and there. They'll be like, "Hey, I know her," you know. But most of the time, I'll probably be sitting behind a desk writing press releases.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Where can people find you in the world?
I am stalker friendly. So Twitter and Facebook, it's Kelly Shbayi, which is K-E-L-L-Y. Everybody seems to like misspell the Y. They do K-E-L-L-I or whatever, but it's K-E-L-L-Y-S-H-I-B-A-R-I. I'm a social media whore. So hit me up on Twitter or Facebook. I usually respond right away.
Awesome. All right. Have fun at the convention.
Thank you so much.
Convention. Conference. Go team fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.